And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show. Unfortunately, not streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, dealing with a major internet outage in the northern half of New Hanover County. But we are on podcast and on YouTube this morning. Thanks for joining me. You can, of course, check out the podcast feed 24/7 wherever you get your shows. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. And if you are so inclined, give the show a rating or review, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, YouTube Podcasts, wherever you listen to the show. Well, it was a busy day in Washington, D.C. yesterday. You heard it here first on the Nick Craig Show on Thursday. The idea that President Trump was going to sign an executive order dismantling the Department of Education. He was flanked by school children, lawmakers, and parents' rights advocates, as well as Republican governors from across the U.S., including that of Governor Ron DeSantis and Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, as Trump signed an executive order that, quote, calls for the experiment of controlling American education through the program and dollars and the unaccountable bureaucrats those family programs and dollars support has plainly failed our children, our teachers, and our families. This is how it happened live yesterday. This is the president at a conference ahead of signing the executive order, talking about the importance of it, talking about Secretary Linda McMahon and how this process is going to unfold. Let's just watch and watch live and see exactly what went on.
Today we take a very historic action that was 45 years in the making. In a few moments, I will sign an executive order to begin eliminating the federal Department of Education once and for all. And it sounds strange, doesn't it? Department of Education, we're going to eliminate it. And everybody knows it's right. And the Democrats know it's right, and I hope they're going to be voting for it because ultimately it may come before them. But everybody knows it's right, and we have to get our children educated. We're not doing well with the world of education in this country, and we haven't for a long time. And we're pleased to be joined today by the woman who I chose because she's an extraordinary person. And hopefully she will be our last Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon. Linda, thank you. Thank you very much. That's another interesting statement. It's an interesting opening, right? But it's true, and it's been amazing how popular this has been. I tell people that this is what I'm doing today. And they say, oh, it's about time. Everybody says it. Republicans and Democrats have said it. They're all saying it. Also with us are some terrific people. Governors Greg Abbott. Greg, thank you very much. Governor Ron DeSantis, thank you very much, Ron. Mike Braun, congratulations on your victory, Mike. That was a big one. Mike DeWine, thank you very much, Mike. Jeff Landry, Jeff, thank you very much, Jeff. Bill Lee, thank you. Governors, all governors. Brad Little, Brad, thank you very much. Where are you, Brad? Hi, Brad. Jim Pilon, thank you very much, Jim. And Kim Reynolds. These are all people very interested in education and I even see Dan Patrick over there, my friend Dan Patrick. We're joined also by Representatives Tim Walberg and Virginia Fox, Rick Allen.
Big North Carolina shout out there for Virginia Fox.
And again, Dan Patrick, thank you very much, Dan. You've been a great friend of ours. And State Attorneys General Ken Paxton. Ken, I see you there. Andrew Bailey, Andrew, what a job you've done, Andrew. Well, you have some good cases going. You've done a great job. Thank you very much. And co-founder of Moms for Liberty, Tiffany Justice. She's been a hard worker. Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Tiffany. When President Carter.
So I play all of that, the setup, and obviously, you know, hearing all the people's names. I play all of that because I think it's important to bring forward the amount of support that this is receiving from individual states. States that know that they are better in regards to deciding and managing education than the federal government. And folks, this is really the debate. It's not, the debate is not, should we fund schools? That's not the debate that anybody's having. Now, that might be the debate that the left wants to frame. That might be the debate that Democrats, and you've already seen some of the comments on social media, the freaking out, the pearl clutching on cable news over this. That's not the argument that's being framed. The argument being framed is the money that the Department of Education sucks in and then doles out is not the most effective way to use money. There's a lot of waste. There's a lot of bloat in departments like the Department of Education. And if you truly are somebody that cares about educating children, because this is what we always hear from the left, right? We are constantly browbeaten by the left about how important it is to fund education. If you are somebody that follows North Carolina politics in any meaningful way, you have heard Democrats for the last decade screaming about funding in regards to public education. It's never enough. It needs to be more. Here's your process for that to take place. If you're somebody that wants more funding in the Department of wants more funding for school systems, then cutting out the Department of Education and immediately reallocating those funds to states and to local school systems is the way to do it. When you cut out a level of government, the amount of money that you have, the amount of resources that you have available skyrockets, because you're no longer spending hundreds of millions of dollars on administration costs for that money. And that's what the Department of Education is. Now Trump's going to get into some details on the Department of Education, of course, started by Jimmy Carter back in the late 1970s.
Carter created the Federal Education Department in 1979. It was opposed by members of his own cabinet, as well as the American Federation of Teachers, the New York Times editorial board, and the famed Democrat Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. History has proven them right, absolutely right. After 45 years, the United States spends more money on education by far than any other country, and spends likewise by far more money per pupil than any country, and it's not even close. But yet, we rank near the bottom of the list in terms of success.
I'm going to stop the president right there again. This is something that is really hard for Democrats to wrap their head around. They are under the impression that the problem with education is a financial one. Democrats are under the impression that if you just give more money to schools, just give more money to education, that we, as a result, get better test scores, that we get better results out of our children's school system. And as the president just laid out, that's not the case. We spend more educating our children than any other country in the world, yet we are nowhere near the top of the list in education. So maybe it's not a money problem. Maybe it's a structural problem within public education. Maybe it's a structural problem in the Department of Education as to what that money is tied to, what that money can be used for, the strings attached with the money that comes from the feds. And here in North Carolina, there's a huge issue with the funding formula. There's like 36 funding formulas or something. I did a panel a couple of months ago. I moderated a panel for the John Locke Foundation on education and spoke to experts about education funding. And the constant thread was that the funding formula in North Carolina is too damn complicated. That it takes individuals, budget chairs of school systems, it takes them years to figure out the funding formula because it is so complicated. There's something like 36 funding formulas used to fund public education across the state. That needs to be changed. There's no reason for that to take place, at least with the experts that I've spoken to, individuals like Dr. Bob Lubke over at the John Locke Foundation, who's made the point very clear that we have to streamline this process. There's no reason for funding and education to be as complicated as it is. There's just no justification for it. And we know for a fact that more money does not equate to better results. You just heard the president lay it out. And anybody that wants to argue otherwise is just being foolish. Anybody that wants to argue otherwise is living in some sort of fairyland. Because the math doesn't prove it, folks. This is not a money problem. Yes, money's an important factor, but doubling what we spend on education does not guarantee, and I would argue does not equate to better scores. You could pay teachers $250,000 a year. That doesn't mean children are going to get a better education. This is a really tough issue that the left can't seem to wrap their head around. It's not a money issue. More from the president yesterday afternoon.
It's an amazing stat. Those are two stats you don't want. The most money spent per pupil, and you're at the bottom of the list. And that's where we are, like it or not. And we've been there for a long time.
Amen.
70% of eighth graders are not proficient in either reading or in math. 70%. 40% of fourth graders lack even basic reading skills, can't read. Students in our public elementary and middle schools score worse in reading today than when the department opened, by a lot. In Baltimore, 40% of the high schools have zero students who can do basic mathematics. Not even the very simplest of mathematics. I said, give me your definition of basic. And they're talking about like adding a few numbers together. Despite these breathtaking failures, the department's discretionary budget has exploded by 600% in a very short period of time, and employs bureaucrats in buildings all over Washington, D.C. And as a former real estate person, I will tell you, I ride through the streets of Washington and it says Department of Education, Department of Education. I said, how do you fill those buildings? It's crazy what's happened over the years. I'm pleased to report that after offering these federal employees two generous buyout options, and they were very generous, and they're good people, but they were very generous. My administration has initiated a reduction in force, and we're already cutting numbers that were really surprising to a lot that we were able to do it so successfully. And we've cut the number of bureaucrats in half. 50% have taken office, which is great. Thank you. Under the action I'm taking today, a small handful of Democrats and others that we have employed for a long time, and there are some Republicans, but not too many, I have to be honest with you. But the department's useful functions, and such as, and they're in charge of them, Pell Grants, Title I funding, resources for children with disabilities and special needs will be preserved, fully preserved. They're all going to be so. If you look at the Pell Grants, supposed to be a very good program, Title I funding and resources for children with special disabilities and special needs, they're going to be preserved in full. And
that just completely destroys the left's argument, because I've seen a bunch of individuals claiming that now individuals with disabilities now will not be able to get an education. I've seen comments on social media. I've seen idiots on cable news claiming, well, if you have a special needs child, when the Department of Education, quote unquote, goes away, as the left wants to claim, just completely vanishes, which it's not, then your child with special needs is no longer going to be able to go to school, no longer going to be able to get an education. Well, you just heard directly from the horse's mouth in regards to those programs are going to be protected through the Department of Education. Because, in fact, it is important to provide a quality education to individuals with very severe special needs. That is quintessential to the Department of Education. Sure. Nobody is arguing that fact at all. But see, it's a typical fear-mongering tactic from the left. This is what they do. They can't argue the issue on morals. They can't argue the issue because the stats and the facts that you just heard the president lay out are accurate. We spend more per pupil than any other country in the world, and we do not have the best results. They can't argue against that because it completely flies in the face of their big government control on education. So then they go into pulling at your heartstrings and claim that kids with special needs, well, they're no longer going to be able to get an education. Typical disingenuous argument from the left. Not surprised. This is just how they operate.
Distributed to various other agencies and departments that will take very good care of them, and it's very important to Linda, I know, and it's very important to all of us. But beyond these core necessities, my administration will take all lawful steps to shut down the department. We're going to shut it down and shut it down as quickly as possible. It's doing us no good. We want to return our students to the states where just some of the governors here are so happy about this. They want education to come back to them to come back to the States, and they're going to do a phenomenal job. You know, if you look, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, I have to tell you, I give them a lot of credit. China's top 10. And so we can't now say that bigness is making it impossible to educate, because China is very big. But you have countries that do a very good job in education. And I really believe, like some of the governors here today, from states that run very, very well, including a big state like Texas, but states that run very well are going to have education that will be as good as Norway, Denmark, Sweden, and those top Finland, those top countries that do so well with education. I think they'll do every bit as well. And what do you think about that, Governor? Do you agree? Huh? I think so. Ron, do you agree? I think so. Florida? Iowa? That's right. I really believe that. They'll be as good as any of them. And then you'll have some laggards, and we'll work with them. And we can all tell you who the laggards will be right now, probably, but let's not get into that. But we'll work with them, and we're going to make them, they'll do a job. I think they'll do a job, and they'll go to sections of the state. For instance, New York, you'll have a Manhattan, and you'll have a Suffolk County, and you'll have Nassau County, and you'll have Westchester County. You'll do four or five or six of them. You have upstate New York, and those counties, I think, are going to do very well. And I think ultimately Manhattan should do very well, but we'll break it down into sections, and I think it'll be really, really good, and they're going to be probably the tougher ones, but I think they have a chance to do really well. But we're going to be returning education, very simply, back to the states where it belongs, and this is a very popular thing to do, but much more importantly, it's a common sense thing to do, and it's going to work. Absolutely, it's going to work, and I can tell you from dealing with the governors and others in the state, they want it so badly. They want to take their children back and really teach their children individually. Probably the cost will be half, and the education will be maybe many, many times better. So we look forward to this. I want to just make one little personal statement. Teachers, to me, are among the most important people in this country. And we're going to take care of our teachers. And I don't care if they're in the union or not in the union. That doesn't matter. But we're going to take care of our teachers. And I believe the states will take actually better care of them than they are taken care of right now. They'll work all sorts of systems and even merit systems. Those great teachers are going to be maybe a little bit better rewarded, or maybe that's the way it should be. But the states are going to make that decision. But we're going to love and cherish our teachers along with our children, and they're going to work with the parents, and they're going to work with everybody else. And it's going to be an amazing thing to watch, and it's really going to be something special. And Linda, you're presiding over something that's so important, and you're going to do a fantastic job, just like you have your whole life. I know your whole life I've been watching you. I've been watching you for a long time. She's had nothing but success. So it's tremendous to have you, and hopefully you won't be there too long, but we're going to find something else for you, Linda, okay? So this will conclude what we are talking about with respect to our most cherished group of people, and that's our children. We want to have our children well-educated. We want them to love going to school. We have examples of it. Look at those beautiful, bright-eyed faces. They are so smart. They're so smart. And with that, I'm going to come down, and we're going to sign a very important document, and we're going to be on our way. People have wanted to do this for many, many years, for many, many decades. And I don't know, no president ever got around to doing it, but I'm getting around to doing it. So thank you very much.
Well, those are some of the comments from the president of the United States, Donald Trump, yesterday as he was before he signed the executive order, essentially dismantling, at least in large part, the Department of Education. And, you know, if you actually listen to the words of the president, see, this is where things get really confusing and complicated. If you actually listen to what the president said, what is your objection? He wants teachers to be taken care of. He wants students to get a high quality, better education than they're getting right now. What is the objection to that? What did you hear from the president that is so out of control, that is so outlandish? We want to keep funding schools. We want to give states more control. We want to take care of teachers. I mean, those are his words right out of his mouth. So what's the issue? Why is there so much pearl clutching going on over this? What do you diametrically disagree with? And the answer, folks, it's a rhetorical question. It's a very clear rhetorical question. The issue that we have right now is that the Department of Education, just like the vast majority of the public school system, is used as an indoctrination tool for the progressive left. Due to the funding that they are able to dole out through the Department of Education and the strings that they are able to tie to that money, they are able to push a liberal propagandized message directly out of the Department of Education. That's exactly what's going on here. And that's exactly the issue that the president's calling out. If you care about the education of children, then you should be all in favor of the of rolling back the Department of Education. I found a very interesting chart over on a website, usafacts.org. I'm going to pull this up for our video viewers on YouTube and Rumble. And for our audio listeners, I'll walk through it with you. Here is the 2024 Department of Education budget. So they've got $268 billion worth of spending. So $268 billion worth of spending. Out of that $268, $68 billion is transferred to the states. And when it boils and works its way all the way down, you get about $61.5 billion for education and secondary education. That's $68 billion out of a $268 billion budget. You've got the largest chunk of the Department of Education budget that goes to higher education. $124 billion goes to colleges. That is the amount of money. That is the largest sum of cash in the entire Department of Education budget is higher ed. When you combine the money, that is being transferred to the states, when you combine the money that is being given directly to elementary and secondary education through the Department of Education, you're talking about less than a quarter of the budget. So let's not fool ourselves that $268 billion from the Department of Education is all going to your kids' school. It's not. A vast majority of it, $124 billion of it, is going to colleges. And within all of this money, look at all the layers and levels of government. If the Department of Education just cut a blank check to the states and said, North Carolina, here's your amount of money. Here is $6 billion a year, whatever the number is. Who knows how it's broken down. Here's $6 billion a year. We're going to write this to the state government, and then they can dole it out. They can figure out what they want to do with it. That's the example that needs to be taken. That is the solution, I believe, to getting rid of the Department of Education. Give the money to the states. Give the money to the locally elected officials. We elect a General Assembly every 2 years across North Carolina. We have individuals that are experts in education funding that are members of our General Assembly, individuals like State Senator Michael Lee, who has championed public education across the state, has championed programs like the Opportunity Scholarship Program, where if the public school system isn't working for your child, you can apply for an alternative. You can apply for a voucher through the state to get some of your taxpayer dollars back to send your kid to a private school. What's the objection? The actual objection. Let me make sure I clarify. Right? I know the, oh my God, the kids with special needs are not going to get an education under. I understand the ridiculous argument that the left is trying to make that is not based in facts, that is not based in any sort of truth or reality. I get that argument. But what is the real argument that is being made? I have yet to see or hear one. Test scores overall have barely risen since the 1970s. By the way, we had public education in the United States before 1979 when Jimmy Carter announced the formation of the Department of Education. Test scores have barely moved since the 1970s, despite a 245% spending increase within the Department of Education. So we've increased spending by 245%, and test scores are essentially where they were 50 years ago. That's obviously a problem, right? We talk about return on investment. We talk about spending money and getting results. Are we getting results in regards to public education? With the whopping $268 billion worth of spending that the Department of Education does. That's not their whole budget. That's just their spending. Out of the $268 billion that they spend each and every year, which, by the way, the Department of Education is the fourth largest at the federal level. Are we getting a good return on our investment? Are we getting a good result for the copious amounts of cash that we're spending? The answer is no. Very succinctly, very clearly, no. When you look at the United States and look at those statistics compared to everywhere else, when you put the United States on a chart and say, how much do you spend on education? Well, it's the most, as the president noted. Here's a graphic from one of those stat websites, and here's the details. Average spending per student in the United States is over $16,000, the highest by far. Second lowest, United Kingdom. Below that, Canada at $13,000, Germany $12,000, Finland $11,000, France $11,000. The average worldwide is about close to $11,000. So the United States is $5,000+ ahead of that. And then when you compare where the United States falls in regards to education, when you put the United States on a chart and say, where does the U.S. fall in regards to education? Well, this is the end result that you get. You find that the United States is 24th in reading, 26th in math, and 28th in science. With China, Singapore, Hong Kong, which Singapore and Beijing and Hong Kong are both in China, Japan, South Korea, Finland, all of these places are way higher than the United States. Yet they're spending nowhere near the amount of dollars that the U.S. is. Folks, if that's not a major problem to you, then I guess you're just not interested in finding a solution. If spending more per pupil than any other developed world and not getting the best or even close to the best results is not a problem to you, then you're truly not interested in a solution. I don't know any other way to break it down. I don't know any other way to describe it. This is a massive, massive issue. We spend more than anybody else, and we don't get the results that back that up. The system is broken. The system's broken. President Trump is trying to fix it. Will it work? I hope so. If it doesn't work and it needs to be tweaked, then that's fine. But I can tell you this. Regardless of what the president does with the Department of Education, the system we have right now doesn't work. We don't have hundreds of billions of dollars more to throw at education to hope and pray that the scores go up. We as taxpayers don't have hundreds of millions of dollars more a year to send up to the states, to send up to Washington, D.C. to fund education. It's not practical. So we need to start coming up with innovative solutions to find a solution to the problem. But just doing the same stupid, sorry thing over and over again and expecting a different result is not working. What is the definition of insanity? It's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that is exactly what's going on in education right now. We continue to increase spending. We continue to fund education. And the end result is we don't have better scores. We don't have more literate students. We don't have students that are better at math or science, even though we continue to spend more money. That's the issue at hand. A shakeup has to happen. And I give a huge amount of kudos and credit to Donald Trump for actually following through on something that presidents for decades have talked about. Ronald Reagan talked about it in the 80s. He said he was going to end the Department of Education. He was unsuccessful in doing so. And that's not a dig on Reagan. But presidents have talked about it. It's been a constant discussion. Congressman David Rauser has introduced legislation year after year demolishing and getting rid of the Department of Education. It's constantly talked about. Nobody's ever had the balls to do it. That's what it comes down to. Trump's that guy. Linda McMahon, the secretary, is that guy. I know she's a woman, but she's in the context of this. She's that guy. So she was on with Bret Baier last night on the Fox News channel a couple hours after this signing ceremony. And Bret Baier asked her, okay, the president was very clear to say that there are still going to be programs within the Department of Education. Things are still going to be funded. How is this process going to roll out? Here was Linda McMahon in an exclusive interview last night on Fox News.
Well, I think he was correct in saying that we were going to do everything legally. That's what he has said to me from the very beginning. He would like for me to move as swiftly as we can because he believes the sooner that we can close the department, the more efficiently we can have the funds distributed to the states, and perhaps they will even have more funding when there isn't the overhead and bureaucracy from the Department of Education. But clearly he wanted to state and let Congress know that he intends to work with them. I want Congress to be a partner in this, and I believe they will be. Because both sides of the aisle know that what is happening to education in our country cannot be allowed to stand because we are failing our students.
The left is obviously very upset about this. I'll take it from both sides, as you're pointing out. Here is Randy Weingarten. Take a listen.
A kid who has disabilities, a kid who is poor, a kid who's going to Head Start, a kid who's in a rural area, they're talking about taking this money away from kids and putting it into block grants and giving it as vouchers, which basically serve kids who are already in private schools.
So I'd like you to address that directly.
Well, certainly Randy Weingarten and I have not had any opportunity to have a conversation. I at one point heard her say a day or two ago that the president was going to take education away from children. And clearly that's not what we're going to do. We want to make education better for children. The president is an absolute proponent of school choice. And we are going to work very hard to make sure that children are not held prisoner in failing schools. Over the past couple of days, I have toured charter schools throughout the state of Florida. And I went to one school that's called a classical school, where they were really back to basics with their multiplication tables and reading by phonics, returning to the science of reading. These children were absolutely joyous in their classroom. They were having fun. The teacher was having fun. They were reciting their times tables. And this fourth grade, four-year-olds doing this, and they were just amazing. So we want to see that kind of enthusiasm and that kind of success rates in every school across the country.
And just to put some stats on it, you were born in New Bern, North Carolina, which is Craven County, North Carolina. That's a rural region. And if you look at the math and reading scores, and we have this graphic here, 21 to 24, you can see math in 21 and 22 and reading 51.6, 49.9, and then 23, 24 actually goes down 46.5 to 48.6. That tracks other places around the country that have seen proficiency go down despite the level of money going up.
Well, I think that's been the president's, you know, hue and cry. He said we are spending more money per pupil than any country in the world, and we're seeing less results. That's a clear indicator that we are not doing the best thing we can do for our students. I do think returning to basics is the best way to do it. We need to teach math and English and literacy and writing. We don't need to teach ideology. We have to let teachers teach. I have such respect for our teachers. I think it is the most noble profession in the world, and I have seen what can happen when teachers are allowed to teach and to be innovative and be creative in their class.
I'm going to stop her real quick because they just put a graphic up on the screen. The NAEP report, which is the National Education Report Card that comes out. In eighth grade, the percentage of proficiency in math is 28%. 28%. We spend hundreds of billions of dollars a year in education, and the math proficiency in grade 8 is not even 30%. If you don't believe that that's a serious problem, then you need to check yourself into a mental institution. That is an abysmal failure for the United States. That is an abysmal failure for the public education system. And the solution every time is, oh, just give us more money. Teachers just need to make more money, and then that solves the problem. Nonsense. The budget's increased by 300% since the start of the Department of Education. 300%. The scores are abysmal. Their laughingstock, reading proficiency in grade 8, is 30%. 30%. 3 out of every 10 students can read. What the hell are we doing? I don't know any other way. I mean, how can you look at these numbers? How can you look at the education stats in America and think that everything is fine? How can you look at the education stats in this country right now and say, oh yeah, we just need to keep going down this path. Walking straight down this road is definitely going to get us towards a higher proficiency. You're out of your freaking mind. The data doesn't lie here, folks. The stats don't lie. Now, of course, you heard from Randy Weingarten, who's the head of the National Education Association Union. And she, of course, fear-mongers, same thing. Special needs kids aren't going to get an education, and rich people are going to be able to send their kids to private schools. Rich people are already sending their kids to private schools. That argument doesn't work. That's not the problem that's going on. A family making $150,000 a year getting $2,000 from the state government is not the reason that reading proficiency in eighth grade is 30%. That is a completely disingenuous, ridiculous, stupid argument to make. But that's all the left can do. Because if they look at what they've created with the Department of Education, if they look at the disaster that has unfolded on their watch with public education, they can't argue it. There's nothing they can say to right the wrong. So they go into fear-mongering. They go into tugging at your heartstrings over children with special needs. Incredibly disingenuous. And the reality, I think, is very simple. Democrats don't care about education. They say they do. They will yell from the mountaintops how much they care about education, how important education is. But when you tell them and say and show them the numbers, show them the statistics and say, hey, the solution that you guys have brought forward doesn't work. They want nothing to do with it. They want zero to do with the solution. They just would like to continue to yell and scream about it. They like to continue to bitch and complain about education, claim that Republicans are the problem. Meanwhile, this is all unfolded under their watch, their bureaucracy, their control over the Department of Education. They don't care. Plain and simple. Prove me wrong. You can say you care about education as much as you want. If you are okay with these scores, and if you think the Department of Education needs to continue with a 28% proficiency in grade 8 math, then you're insane. You are absolutely verifiably insane. I'm going to roll Linda McMahon's comments back a little bit. Take a listen. This is more from Linda McMahon.
I think it is the most noble profession in the world, and I have seen what can happen when teachers are allowed to teach and to be innovative and be creative in their classrooms. You know, Brett, for every dollar that goes into the school system, the federal funding, it's been reported to me that almost 47 cents of that dollar is spent in regulatory compliance. Teachers, they don't want to stay. They're leaving the profession because they are bogged down by regulation. Let's lift that burden and let them do what they do best, which is teach.
And there you go. That's Linda McMahon on Brett Baer's special report show on Fox News yesterday. I just don't see what the argument can be. The actual argument. I understand the emotional argument. I understand the political argument that the education institution, the Department of Education, and the 47 cents per dollar that's being spent to follow the regulations, follow the indoctrination that's going on in the public education system. I understand that part. But when we talk about actual reading and writing proficiency, when we talk about test scores, when we talk about all of these other statistics, the argument completely evaporates and vanishes. The left can't make the argument because they're on the wrong side of history with it. This has completely happened under their watch and their control. The progressive savior, Jimmy Carter, started the Department of Education, and it's been an abysmal failure since the beginning. Trump has said no more. We're going to have an educated population. We're going to have an educated group of young individuals. We're going to educate our children, and we're going to allow the states to do it. This is a momentous situation unfolding in America right now. You are talking about true generational change in regards to education. And it's happening under the Trump administration. It's happening under individuals like Secretary Linda McMahon, who seem to actually care about children. Not just talking about caring about it, like Randy Weingarten and everybody else in the education industry, who are all Democrats, who all donate to Democrats. All of the teachers' unions, all of the education unions donate almost exclusively to Democrat candidates. They don't care about education. Prove me wrong. Phenomenal news out of Washington, D.C. yesterday. Props to Secretary McMahon and props to President Trump for actually bringing this forward. Well, unfortunately, last night, the UNCW men's basketball team was unsuccessful in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They had a very much an uphill battle. They fell to Texas Tech in a 72-82 loss, putting an end to the Seahawks season. However, still a great season for them. Winning the CAA tournament in Washington, D.C. back a couple of weeks ago, kept the game close for the most part, even through the second half. The game was tied 43-43. However, Texas Tech ran away with it towards the end. A phenomenal season for the UNCW men's basketball team. A huge shout out to Coach Siddle for his work with the team, winning the CAA tournament for the first time since 2017 and getting the bid into the NCAA tournament. And we'll keep an eye on them for next year. They are a force to be reckoned with, but unfortunately falling short yesterday in their first game against Texas Tech, 72-82. A great season for UNCW, a huge honor for them to be in the NCAA tournament. Turning our attention to some state news this morning, a movement continues in regards to constitutional carry across North Carolina. Permitless carry legislation did pass the state Senate yesterday, eclipsing a major hurdle to make constitutional carry legal across North Carolina. The Freedom to Carry NC bill, which is Senate Bill 50, passed in a party line vote 26-18 yesterday in the Senate. The bill would allow individuals to carry a concealed handgun without a permit across North Carolina. The state will still allow North Carolinians to obtain a concealed carry permit for the purpose of reciprocity agreements for other states, but it will no longer be required to conceal carry your pistol in North Carolina. Bill sponsor Danny Britt, Warren Daniel, and Eddie Selter all said in a joint statement, quote, "This is the next step in creating a freer North Carolina. Law-abiding citizens deserve to exercise their Second Amendment rights without government interference. It is time for North Carolina to join the ranks of the 29 other states that have constitutional carry." That bill now goes to the North Carolina House of Representatives for consideration, which has also introduced constitutional carry legislation this session. Grassroots North Carolina, GRNC, you'll be familiar with them. I spoke many a times with Paul Vallone from Grassroots North Carolina on the radio in the past, recently presented some 5,000 petition signatures to House Speaker Destin Hall, who is the Speaker of the North Carolina House, who said it was just a matter of time before the legislation advances. GRNC President Paul Vallone expressed optimism about the legislation passing the Senate on Thursday, saying, quote, "Obviously, we're very happy with what the Senate has done. We appreciate them changing their stance from previous years, and we look forward to getting a similar bill through the House." Now, all Democrats in the Senate did vote against the legislation, and several held a press conference following the vote to condemn what they described as a dangerous and deadly bill. And I think a lot of the discussion around constitutional carry, I think a lot of the issues around it come from an education issue. People are under the impression, if you've never gone through the process of purchasing a gun, you just there's this assumption that you just walk into a gun shop and say, "Oh, I like that pistol right there," and you just walk out with it. That's not how it works. I mean, you go through a federal background check. You go through the NICS system to verify that you are legally allowed to purchase and hold and carry a pistol. I mean, there's a federal registration system that you go through. If you buy it at a gun store, they load it right up on the computer. if you've ever purchased from a gun show. They call some sort of hotline number that they have. They read off your details, and then they get an authorization code back from the federal system. And that system says this person is a law-abiding citizen that can carry a gun. If you're a convicted felon, the system come back and says, nope, this person can't legally own a gun. Don't sell it to them. That's the process. So Democrats claim this is going to be dangerous and deadly. Nothing is changing. The only thing that's changing is having to pay for a class and go through additional training to legally conceal carry. And I've done this, and there's a lot of great concealed carry teachers. A lot of great concealed carry teachers. Spoke a lot in the past with Matt Rhodes on the radio about this. So we'll be chatting with him in the coming days and weeks. Is there still a reason to get additional training with a firearm? Absolutely, right? Because you want to be able to know, God forbid, you have to use a firearm. God forbid you are in a situation where you have to protect yourself or your family. You still want to be educated on how to use your firearm. You don't want to just buy it, buy some ammo for it, load it up, and put it in a gun safe. That's not going to do you any good. God forbid you have to use that firearm. So there's still a place for training. Individuals should still take advantage of private classes to learn how to actually use a firearm. So Democrats, you know, freaking out about this and yelling and screaming about this, I just don't think does anything. I just think it's just ridiculous. There's like 30 states that already have constitutional carry on the books. North Carolina needs to be one. So that's moving its way forward in the North Carolina Senate. Already moved forward in the North Carolina Senate, I should say, and it is now making its way to the House, where we heard those comments from House Speaker Destin Hall back a couple of weeks ago that it's just a matter of time before this happens. It's just a matter of time before something like this passes the North Carolina House. That's absolutely phenomenal. That's exactly what needs to happen. Now, turning our attention this morning to a story that we have really been tracking all week, some comments or this ongoing battle that's been taking place over in regards to activist judges, Democrat activist judges that have decided that they are the chief executive of the United States, that they themselves have decided that they are the ones that can decide what the president does and doesn't do. I wanted to get to these clips yesterday, but I didn't have the ability to do so. This is from Wednesday's press briefing from Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt. Some additional comments about these judges, about the activism that goes on. Take a listen to some of these comments.
Since you brought up the judges, I would like to point out that the judges in this country are acting erroneously. We have judges who are acting as partisan activists from the bench. They are trying to dictate policy from the President of the United States. They are trying to clearly slow walk this administration's agenda, and it's unacceptable. As the President said last night, we will continue to comply with these court orders. We will continue to fight these battles in courts. But it's incredibly apparent that there is a concerted effort by the far left to judge shop, to pick judges who are clearly acting as partisan activists from the bench in an attempt to derail this president's agenda. We will not allow that to happen. And not only are they usurping the will of the president and the chief executive of our country, but they are undermining the will of the American public, tens of millions of Americans who duly elected this president to implement the policies that are coming out of this White House.
Strong response there from Caroline Leavitt. Strong, strong response. And that was a phenomenal back and forth between her and I believe that was Katie Pavlich from townhall.com, maybe, asking that question. But of course, CNN had to get into the fray on this. They, of course, hate President Trump, hate Republicans, hate everything that you and I stand for. This is that exchange.
How does a president define a bad judge? Is it just someone who disagrees with him? And is that a dangerous precedent in this case? Because this is a temporary ruling from Judge Boasberg that he could ultimately rule in your favor. Is he setting up a standard here for calling for the impeachment of a judge who may ultimately rule on your side?
No, it has nothing to do with disagreeing with the president on policy. It's with disagreeing with the Constitution and the law. And it's trying to usurp the authority of the executive branch of this country. It's having baseless reasoning for these injunctions, and it's a clear effort by these judges to slow roll this president's agenda.
That's exactly the case. Right? These are baseless temporary stays, temporary blocks. And of course, CNN, oh, you could be setting a very dangerous precedent here, Caroline Levin. Trump could be setting a very dangerous precedent. You guys aren't worried by the fact that judges are just randomly deciding that they're going to block executive action from the president of the United States with no constitutional authority whatsoever? With no salient argument being made as to why they are making the decisions that they are? I mean, it's absurd. But this is what they think is happening. This is what they think is good, right? Because it's stopping Trump's agenda. The left-wing media hates Trump's agenda. They hate everything that Trump stands for. They hate everything that you and I stand for and believe in. So they, of course, cheer on these judges. They're very happy that this is happening. They appreciate that this is going on. But when, of course, Trump says, well, you guys have no constitutional basis or authority to do this, then they get very upset. Then they get very, very frustrated. Then they have a huge problem with it. Then it's, you know, threat to democracy. Threat to democracy from Trump. Shaking in my boots this morning. Not because the internet has been out for 24 hours, thanks to AT&T, but because Trump is a threat to democracy. So, I've got one final clip for you this morning. Mark Levin, who, of course, is the great one. And for anybody that has been a fan of talk radio for years now, he was on Fox News a couple of days ago with, I think he was on with Shannon Bream, talking about just this issue. And he called out Chief Justice John Roberts for his ridiculously weak statement earlier in the week. Here is the great one on Fox News just a couple days ago.
I would say that John Roberts, who I knew before he was a judge, when we both worked in the Reagan administration, it's time to grow up here, Judge. Think about Justice Rehnquist. What would Justice Rehnquist, the Chief Justice, have done when those four originalists 2 weeks ago, when this case involving another rogue Democrat judge, ordered the President of the United States to spend money on foreign activities? What would Rehnquist have done? Would he have joined the four, or would he have joined the radical three? This is an issue of separation of powers, and if it's not resolved, you basically, in the form of your question, have answered it. How the hell are we going to have 680 individual, unelected federal judges? They're federal district judges, not federal national judges, all sitting there behind their desks with their two or three clerks saying, you know, I don't like this idea, Trump sending this. I don't like this idea, banning transgender. I don't like this idea. This is exactly what Locke and Montesquieu and Jefferson and Madison warned. When you have a combination of branches rather than separation of branches, and Scalia did too, you have a tyranny. And I don't care about what John Roberts pronounces from the bench. Do your job, Chief Justice of the United States. Don't get into the political fight. Fix it. Because if you don't fix it, we're going to lose our constitutional construct, or Congress is going to have to figure out some way to fix it. One other thing. The idea, and I've even heard it on my beloved network from some of these former whatevers, that we shouldn't raise our voice. That's our job. This government exists for we the people. It doesn't exist for John Roberts, the judges, Congress, or anybody else. This whole thing was set up for us, to protect us. When these judges are conducting themselves this way, when they're interfering with an election, when they're grabbing, seizing power in front of our eyes, we're all smart, we see it. From the executive branch, a president of the United States, he's elected nationally. They're created by Congress. They're not even in the Constitution.
Bingo.
They're using a power judicial review that's not even in the Constitution, that was created by the Supreme Court in 1803. They should at least have some level of deference to the president of the United States. And notice one other thing. Compare the number of restraining orders, injunctions, and reversals that Donald Trump has had with the last 10 presidents of the United States.
We just had those up on the board, Mark.
It is grotesque.
Yeah.
It is grotesque. The great one sounding off. Love Mark Levin. He's spot on about this. John Roberts, as I mentioned earlier in the week, John Roberts, I guess, just doesn't want to deal with it. He wants to just bury his head in the sand, kick his feet, and say, problem will solve itself. It's not going to solve itself. Trump is going to bring this fight going forward. These district court judges are acting completely out of their authority, and they need to be slapped back down to reality. They absolutely need to be slapped back down to reality. This fight's going to continue as these judges continue to act as partisan hacks. Trump's going to bring the fight right to him. This is going to be a fascinating thing to watch unfold over the next couple of weeks and months. I'm very much looking forward to it because we have got an out-of-control court system right now. And I look forward to seeing Trump bring that battle to these judges. Again, unfortunately, not live this morning due to a major AT&T internet outage in the northern half of New Hanover County. So apologize to all of the live listeners that normally join us at 7 o'clock weekday mornings on the Nick Craig Show on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Glad I was able to get something out this morning and glad to have you alongside on the podcast. I do want to remind you that if you are interested in exclusive content, including daily show notes and our exclusive monthly Zoom chat, which will be happening next week, I encourage you to head on over to the website, patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. Thanks for joining me this week, this Friday morning on the Nick Craig Show. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday morning, Lord willing, live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great weekend.